Welcome to The Firing Line with Rick Travis, Legislative Director of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. The Firing Line radio show is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. And now, here's your host, Rick Travis.
Good afternoon, patriots of the Inland Empire and throughout Southern California. This is Rick Travis, the Legislative Director for the California Rifle and Pistol Association, and I am happy to be here with you on CRPA's Firing Line Radio. Today, I have my special guest, my friend. He actually doesn't even need me to say anything because he's so legendary on YouTube videos throughout the internet, around the world. People watch him all the time. Mr. Kevin Small, the Director of Advocacy and Grassroots for the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Welcome, Kevin.
Oh, my gosh, that was quite an introduction. Don't necessarily know that I deserve that, but yeah, thank you. As always, it's a pleasure to be here.
So before we get into it, Kevin and I are going to be talking to you, and I want you to picture today a little different, whether you're out doing yard work, walking around, listening to this podcast, smoking, you know, a cigar, whatever it is you do when you're relaxing, listening to this show, or maybe not relaxing. Maybe you've got a little road rage because I helped you out with that as you're driving your car. But today it's going to be a little different. I want you to picture you sitting in a room with Kevin and I as we discuss this week and what's going on different pieces of the legislation. We want to kind of let you in on the conversations that we have about this and maybe seeing it from our side and our angle. That will help you have more confidence, more talking points, and more ways to really equip yourself in this fight for your rights here as we're in election year and as, well, it's an American thing to fight for your Second Amendment rights. That started coming up here, Kevin, on April 19th in 1775 when all of us as British said, no, we weren't going to allow the military to come and take our firearms rights away from us. And we turned on them and became Americans that day. So, looking at that, let's look at this week. So this is a typical week in the Capitol. It usually means that, you know, I fly up, sometimes drive up, depending on what's going on, but most of the time fly up to Sacramento and spend Monday in the Capitol going around, meeting with different legislators and their staff, trying to push our points, trying to say why this isn't smart or this is smart, and trying to make those connections and build those relationships. And then it moves into Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, depending on the week. Sometimes it's just Tuesday. Sometimes it's multiple days of testimony. And so we had a really big week this week. We had 1160, which we'll talk about a little bit more later on, but that is for everybody. Senate Bill 1160 from Portantino that was designed to go after all of us, every gun owner. We were just going to wipe this baby out, and we were going to make sure that, you know, or at least he was going to make sure, I should say, that none of us would have access to anything. We would have to pay taxes on it. We'd have to register it. That's right, folks. This is the mandatory, you know, go after the whole shebang. So what happened on 1160 is really interesting. And I'm just going to show you how you all have helped us do a lot of great things. Now, first, there's this legend. And this legend says, oh, 1160 is dead. Nope, that's a lie. 1160 is not dead. The next part of the legend is, well, 1160 got pulled. Yes. So Kevin himself called me and said, Rick, like, so the bill got pulled. Where does that put us? And so this is the conversation that we had. I had to go back and look at Kevin and go, so here's what pulling the bill means. It means for some reason the author doesn't think that's the best time to talk about their bill. And sometimes that does mean the bill is dead because the author says, oops, probably bit off more than I can chew. Maybe I didn't understand the terrain. Maybe there's some issue that came up like it's unconstitutional. But with Portantino, that last one, while it should matter, doesn't. And so what could possibly be the reason? So, Kevin, when we go to look at support for this bill, who would we normally think would be supporting a Portantino anti-Second Amendment, anti-law-abiding gun owner bill?
Well, you could normally probably expect organizations like the Brady Campaign or Moms Demand Action or a whole slew of others, depending on what specifically it is the bill is touching. I mean, this one being an all-out registration, you would at least expect to see some of those larger national groups that operate in every state as sort of an automatic.
Yeah, and I think that's really important when you bring up every state because as you and I normally talk, we honestly look at every bill and go, okay, what's the other states, at least in the western U.S., that are going to attempt this stuff after getting it through in California or trying it in California? And we expect groups like you said, Giffords and Soros-backed groups and groups backed by Bloomberg, et cetera. So, folks, check this out. Kevin, how much support did he have on this bill Tuesday morning?
Yeah, to my surprise, they had none. Absolutely zero support on this bill.
Zero, folks. But thanks to all of you and working with the Capital Canary thing, which, Kevin, can you give a shout-out on that so people know what to keep using?
Well, yeah, I actually will give a shout-out, and I think that it kind of plays into, you know, some more questions that I have for you as the lobbyist in this conversation. But first of all, we do work with a software called Capital Canary or Phone to Action. If you are subscribed to it or to CRPA emails, you may have received an email saying, hey, it's time to take action on this bill now. Essentially, what it does is has you enter your name and address. And in doing so, it takes your zip code and actually connects you to the legislators that actually represent you. So there's no needing to look up information on the people you're trying to send these emails to. It has a pre-written opposition email that it will automatically send to the state senator and state assemblymen that represent you on any of these given bills. I mean, we're looking at a lot of bills that we're going to be opposing this year. This has been a great way. And I can already tell you, looking at the data that comes in on the back end between Senate Bill 1253, Senate Bill 1160, and Assembly Bill 262, there have been almost 10,000 opposition emails that have been sent to California legislators throughout the state, and it is only the beginning of the legislative session. I expect that number to increase dramatically as people become more familiar with this software and the emails that come. But as so far, and that's sort of my question to you, because seemingly on the back end, it looks like it's been a really effective way of communicating with legislators. Ultimately, though, you being the person that goes up and talks to these people, I would hope that you're at least getting some comments by these people who are getting tied up at their offices. So I would actually throw it back to you and say, hey, how effective are these thousands and thousands of emails that they're sending, which, by the way, they just simply weren't receiving just a couple of years ago. We've gone from 0 to 100 miles an hour on this and hoping that it takes effect. So what kind of effect is it having?
This has a major impact, Kevin. I mean, I hear from staff most of the time, you know, chiefs of staff and schedulers and other people that handle this stuff. And obviously the person that's assigned to that particular bill in that member's office of the author, get a lot of feedback and like, wow, you guys are generating a lot and it builds coalitions. And that's one of the things too, is that when you're able to go and say, hey, we have this many people that are fighting this bill, you want to join us. And looking at that, I'm going to go through really quick, folks. But this will tell you the opposition: Arcadia Police Officers Association, Burbank Police Department, Cal Oral Wetlands and Waterfowl Council, California Association of Highway Patrolmen, the California Attorneys for Criminal Justice, the Bow Hunters, California Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, the California Coalition of Public Safety Professionals, California Deer, California Houndsmen, California Narcotics Officers. You know, and the list goes on. Folks, there were literally 50 groups that formed this coalition for round one against. Those 50 groups literally are easily over a quarter of a million people saying no collectively. That is where this is at. We're putting numbers up there to really, really stop these kinds of shenanigans. And so when you're an author going up to present a bill and you have zero support, and you're facing off 250,000 people being represented by 50 organizations saying no, that's not a good look, because your fellow people up on that dais are like, you don't have support. Like, what are you doing? And so this is by no means over. That was the thing. Like, no, we're not done. I mean, Portantino's going to put his staff and he's going to double down. He's going to try to get support. He's going to try to measure this, which is why we're not done. We have to get even more people to dogpile on. This is even going to be a bigger effort. And so, Kevin, if somebody wanted to do one of those wonderful Capital Canaries, how do they do that for 1160?
Right now, if you haven't received an email, you can text to the number 52886. You can text SB 1160. It will send you back a text, which you can click on, which will take you directly to the campaign. Or you can go to crpa.org, where we will continue to put up campaigns. It's not just 1160. There's a slew of others that you can advocate for. That would be on the programs tab under legislative advocacy.
And folks, we'll be back here on Firing Line Radio to continue this conversation. We'll see you in just a sec. Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at crpa.org. That's crpa.org.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by Turner's Outdoorsman.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio, folks. This is your host, Rick Travis, the Legislative Director for the California Rifle and Pistol Association. With me today is my best friend in arms that helps me fight these battles every day, the Director of Advocacy and Grassroots for the California Rifle Pistol Association. You see him on YouTube videos everywhere. He's constantly out there in the public space. He's the guy with the beard, the perfect beard, Mr. Kevin Small.
All right, got the dub for the beard in there. Perfect, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. So, Kevin, I understand that you have a really cool friend named Clyde.
I do.
And I got a really cool friend named Rocky. Not Balboa, the Labrador. And you have Clyde the...
He's a Doberman.
Doberman. So here we go, folks. We're talking about our dogs. And you're probably going, wait, hold the door. I thought you guys were talking about legislation. I thought you two were going to tell us about stuff that has to impact the Second Amendment. Now, is this some kind of cheesy play to talk about your dogs? No. This is to talk about man's best friend, the Second Amendment, and your crazy, beyond belief legislature and the stuff that goes on. So let's go back to that classic scene that we all think about and many of us prepare for, which is you're asleep in the middle of the night in your home, and you could be out in the sticks. You could be one of those people here in California that's blessed to live outside of suburbia, and you got like space between you and your neighbors. And when I say space, like an acre, maybe several acres before you get to the next door neighbor. Or you could be in suburbia where, you know, you open up your kitchen window in the morning and you wave at your neighbor who's only like 2 feet away in their kitchen looking back at you. In both of those circumstances, you may not hear the person coming to do you harm because your ears just aren't tuned to that. And you're most likely asleep. But you know whose ears are tuned into that? Your dog. You know, there are some cats that I'm pretty impressed by that can be like, meow, in the middle of the night when they hear something's not right. But most of the time we think of the dog. And so they have been going after dogs in our capital for the past decade. And the reason they do it is because, one, if you can remove sporting dogs, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, from the playing field, you can remove hunting in effect. Because without a sporting dog to go pick up the bird, that whether it's upland game or waterfowl, then you have wanton waste, and that leads to criminal things, which can lead to taking the guns away. So there's been that, those attempts. But there's also another attempt. It's kind of a backdoor. It deals with law enforcement. So Cory Jackson came up with this bill, Assembly Bill 742. We were able to knock it down with the coalition of 2A groups and law enforcement working together because the argument was being made that you couldn't trust canine officers to have enough training to know how to work with their dogs, especially if their dogs were, and this is a key point, off leash. And therefore, we should just eliminate canines and canine officers and the whole thing because they didn't have training. And a lot of people said, well, I'm a gun guy. What does that have to do with me? In fact, I'm not even sure I'm pro-law enforcement, Rick, because I get special privileges. But Kevin, why is that so important with a dog?
Well, there are a lot of things that are important with a dog. First of all, everybody can at some point, if the legislature decides, have to be put through some sort of training with a dog. I mean, how many people do you know that own dogs, and how many people do you know have actually been to a formal training with their dogs? I would argue that less than 50% of those people do, and normally the people that do are people that are already experiencing issues with their dogs, not necessarily even looking to create positive structure in their house or, you know, establish a relationship like in hunting where something specific needs to be trained. This is one of those things that seems to be leading down a slippery slope that everybody could end up being subject to, which, like we've seen in the firearms industry, the more and this is actually a question that I have for you. You know, you see a lot of language in bills like, you know, requiring a commission to establish standards. You know, if you really want to break it down in the English language, isn't that technically what our handgun roster is? They're establishing standards by which a firearm can be legally owned in California. This is the exact same slippery slope. And what you're talking about is Assembly Bill 2042, which, you know, and I actually get caught sometimes doing this, reading the digest. That's basically what it says, requiring a commission to establish standards by 2026 for the use of canines. But when you actually look at the words that are written in the bill, you'll see that those are very pointed attacks to restrict the use of unleashed dogs in pursuit of people for violent and nonviolent crimes. To restrict dogs' use in crowd control, and to restrict a dog biting in any circumstance unless imminent threat of death. Now, when you create have a commission that's creating standards on those specific things, it's almost like they have the conclusion and they just need to find the means by which they're going to reach that conclusion. It's not right, and then there is, you know, the idea that it's going to be pushed from law enforcement onto everyday citizens at their home.
And let's talk about this term imminent threat is very interesting. This came out up in El Dorado County, just as an analogy. We've had two mountain lions that have had to be killed. And I know El Dorado County is a long ways from Southern California. You know, it's way north and a little bit east of Sacramento. But let's look at this realistically. We had a man killed for the first time by a mountain lion in 20 years. The mountain lion was also killed. I think later on that day. Then we just had this week, we had another mountain lion show up in that same county at a school with kids present, 160-pound mountain lion sent up in the tree, and the sheriff's department is talking with the state. Now, when there's kids who run around, that hits that predator-prey reflex. Those kids are like, hey, what's going on? Like, you know, how do we get this done? Like, how do we get those kids away from that cougar without triggering the cougar? And so the sheriff, I think, correctly said cougar in the playground area, checking out the kids, ready to pounce. That's an imminent threat. However, there were other people in the state government that said, no, until the cougar jumped to attack, which is like 1 to 2 seconds, which anybody with a firearm knows, your ability to get a firearm up on a moving target, and like that's just almost an impossible, if not impossible, shot to make and protect kids in a playground. And so the choice was to dispatch to kill the cougar and save the kids, because in the sheriff's mind, imminent threat was cougars in the playground. But to some in the state, until the cougar made a move on your kid, which meant literally getting to the kid, that was an imminent threat. And
this really grinds my gears, because what Hollywood film are these people actually living in? That's just like telling our law enforcement officers to train, or it's like telling our law enforcement agencies to train officers to shoot weapons out of people's hands instead of shooting for body mass when they pose a threat. You can't draw your weapon and then shoot a cougar in the 1 second it takes it to pounce on a child. What world are these people living in where they believe that that cougar in that tree is not an imminent threat to those kids on the playground?
Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely impossible. And this is where we keep having these issues, these impossible issues, that there is just no way that they could come out. And so when we talk about imminent threat with these bills and why we join with law enforcement, Kevin, it's simply this. If law enforcement that goes through literally hundreds of hours of training is being considered by our legislature not to have control of the dog, how about stopping and saying, well, if a bunch of people weren't going after the officer, were doing what they were supposed, I mean, literally, had the person not broken the law, the canine wouldn't be chasing them. Like, how about go back to the root cause? But instead, if they get this from your law enforcement people, then guys, we're the next step. They're going to come and look at your dog, which they're trying to do. And they're trying to come out with other laws that determine if you can or cannot have, you know, this kind of dog or that kind of dog. It is crazy, folks. So as you see CRPA involved in this issue, it's because they're starting to strip everything you can use. We've seen, you know, you can't have a cane, Kevin. You can't have a baseball bat. You can't have this. You can't have that. They're trying to find every way to make you a target for violence while letting criminals out. And so we are holding a line across the board and saying no, because we believe that when government does this, they put you in harm's way. They don't protect you.
And we continue to see evidence that we are in the right. I mean, look at the murder rate in El Salvador dropping by 70% in 2023, simply because they decided to lock up criminals and actually keep them in jail. There's astounding evidence that continues to pour in that's in support of these claims. But I think going back to the dogs, you know, if they're hitting law enforcement, law enforcement's normally the ones who are exempt. That's not going to stop them from coming after you.
We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit turners.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. This is your host, Rick Travis, Legislative Director for the California Rifle Pistol Association. With me again today, of course, is Kevin Small, our Advocacy and Grassroots Director. And we're talking to you about bills. We've talked to you about what happened this week in the Capitol. You're sitting with us as we're doing whatever it is you're doing. We're just happy to be with you because, well, we like being with you. And we're also taking you kind of down the road. So there's also some positive things. I know a lot of people sometimes say, wow, Rick, this is always a depressing show. We don't want to be depressing. We want to have some good things. So we're going to talk about a couple of bills in the hunting space, but I think they will highlight some of the things that we're trying to get done. And this is kind of a different way to come at it, but we had a bill a few years ago called Assembly Bill 395. Now, for those of you in the Empire, you know about a highway known as 395. And this highway has a couple of interesting facts. So one of them is anytime you hear someone who's opposed to hunting come out and saying, oh, those horrible hunters, Kevin, they kill so many animals. In fact, they're the reason that we're losing everything. Well, what's your talking point, folks? Your talking point should be actually hunters don't make into the top 10 reasons deer and other things die. But number one that does is cars. That's right, folks. Our vehicles, planes, trains, and automobiles, mostly the automobiles and trains. But yeah, planes also take out lots of birds that are huntable. So these are the things that are killing our wildlife. And so hunters and the CRPA and other 2A groups got involved. And we got a bill called Assembly Bill 395 to try to take us back to where we actually looked at where these animals were dying. And if it made sense of like, wow, on this curve, elk keep wiped up, being wiped out on the 395. Maybe we should build a pathway that allows the elk to move from one side of the highway to the other without crossing the highway in front of cars. Like, what a novel idea. We save you from having a bad accident, maybe even a fatality, and we save wildlife. The second part of that is, Kevin, did you know we have a budget issue here in California?
Apparently, you know, when they're not reporting an excess because of new tech up in the Bay Area, they are generally reporting deficits these days. Yeah.
And did you know our deficit is bigger today than it was in January of 1930 during the Great Depression?
Well, we've known that, you know, the people we have running our government, you know, lean this way and implement programs that cause deficits for a while now. So it shouldn't necessarily be surprising to learn this if you're learning it for the first time today. But yeah.
And then we have a fire problem that we never seem to have enough wildland firemen to do stuff. We have all these things. So what does that have to do with the hunting bill? And here's what I had to do. So prior to about 15 years ago, folks, we lived in a state that said, hey, wildlife is a precious resource. Hey, when wildlife gets killed, maybe that meat that is salvageable, which sometimes a deer gets hit in the head, that means the rest of the body is good, usable meat. That if collected, we're not talking 3-4 days there, we're talking same day within a couple of hours, could be taken to a local Cal Fire station, could be taken to a whole host of groups that would benefit homeless shelters, battered shelters, all sorts of different types of issues like that to provide good, high-quality, hormone-free meat that you pay sometimes in excess of $20 a pound for in the store to those different groups and thus lower their budget costs and needs. And then all of a sudden somebody said, well, that's roadkill. This is like being in Arkansas. No offense to any of you from Arkansas, but I mean, like, that was just the attitude. And, like, we can't do that. Folks, we throw billions of dollars worth of natural meat into the trash heap further messing things up. So in a state that says, oh, we don't want to mess the environment up, we don't want to do all these things that are wrong, we do a lot of those that are wrong. So we have a bill right now that after we got 395 passed, nobody wanted to do anything about that. So we came out with another bill called Senate Bill 1163. That bill is currently going through the Capitol. Kevin, as you said earlier, has some stuff that you'll be able to see that bill later on down the road and be able to get involved with it and send out a thing of like, yes. But I wanted you to understand that bill is designed to help us literally get out there and get this information to people that says, yes, we should be collecting that food. We should be doing this. This is a bill to force government agencies to do their job since they didn't listen to the first one.
Well, yeah, and I guess just to fire a shot across the bow here, talking about your top 10 list of things that kill deer, there is a funny joke that goes around that, basically asks the question, what are vegans really good at killing? In general, the conversation is what they're good at killing, but they're also pretty good at killing deer. While they might talk about how they don't eat deer, they find themselves pretty high up on that list as well. And you need to understand that the Department of Transportation has worked with the Department of Fish and Wildlife on this, estimating over 100,000 deer hit by motor vehicles every single year. If you're a hunter, if you're not, I can tell you, as far as I'm concerned, a family of four, which I have, you take down a deer, you take down a pig, you've basically got meat for the whole year. That's two animals feeding a family of four for an entire year. Think about how many people can benefit when over 100,000 deer could be salvageable for meat. It could be injected into a bunch of government-run programs. It could be repurposed for retail use. Whatever it is, if people could, the state and the people within it could definitely benefit that. And yeah, what this bill essentially does is it extends the sunset clause on that. What was it? Senate Bill 395.
Right.
All the way back to 2034 for implementation. So I guess my question to you is, Rick, what is it going to take to actually get funding for this so that by that sunset clause, we can have implementation on it ready?
Well, the funding mechanism, it's actually interesting. It depends how people play the numbers. But if you look at, honestly, if we reverted back to the system that was in place prior to the change that led us to where we're at today, we'd actually spend less money because the monies that are going to pay for people to go on their hours to go buy food, bring the food back to these different organizations and all that gets drastically cut. So this actually becomes both beneficial and a cost reduction to those budgets. So it saves us money instead of requiring money. And that's part of what we're trying to lift up. The other one is the navigable waters bill that we're looking at right now, which is 1226, Senate Bill 1226. And this has to do with people that are trying to claim that, oh, when you're on the water, you might be crossing my land. Well, no, if I'm on the water, I'm on the water. I'm not on your land. And therefore, I have a right to fish. That's a national right and a state right. And I have the right to hunt from being on the water. Now, I understand if there's no water there, then yes, I'm trespassing. But if there's enough water to support a boat, stop. Like that's, you have other issues you got to deal with. But we have people that have purchased, both sides of a river and say, oh, well, I don't care that the river is bisecting my two pieces of property. Yeah, but you don't own the river. And so this has become an issue in California. It's part of the access issue. And so this is a great bill that we're trying to get rectified because it's your right to be able to go on the lake, on the river. If it's man-made and you belong to a closed community, that's different. But if it is a public lake or a publicly accessible river, which rivers are publicly accessible by their definition, unfortunately, we're having to do this because we have some people with some weird ownership ideas.
Yeah, and I know that this has been a not a project, but a mindset of yours as the lobbyist. Not just to proactively fight against anti-Second Amendment bills, but also to use effective tactics to continue and bring pro-Second Amendment bills to the Capitol. So here are a couple of great examples of that. We will be using, you know, campaigns for one-click politics on these. So as you guys are listening, watch out for those emails, or you might find them up on the website soon. But it's good to have something to fight for, as opposed to always have something to fight against. So really positive to be able to work with legislators and watch that turn out the way that it does. Hopefully we can get these bills passed.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for you all to understand these are both bills that are going to help support Second Amendment activities, of which hunting is one. But also remember, too, this also helps support your right, because if you lose hunting, then they try to say you don't need ranges. So for those of you that don't hunt, this is why you want to support these bills, because it also helps keep the ranges that you do love to do your different activities on open. That's part of where those Pittman-Robertson dollars from hunting goes to support. So, folks, this is part of that massive fight that we've got going on. And we're going to come back and talk about a couple of other fights that we still have going on and give you some updates in this final segment on this wonderful Saturday. And thank you for being here with Kevin and I, and we'll be back in just a moment on Firing Line Radio.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at CRPA.org. That's CRPA.org.
Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by CCW Safe.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. I'm your host, Rick Travis, Legislative Director for the California Rifle and Pistol Association here on CRPA's Firing Line Radio. Folks, if you haven't joined the California Rifle and Pistol Association, now's the time to do so. We're in the thick of the fight. We're winning. We're getting your rights both protected, and we're getting rights back. And that's part of what we've been talking about on this show. And, folks, we need you to support us. Join CRPA at CRPA.org. More importantly, if you can, here in the Inland Empire, we have chapters that meet all the time in San Bernardino, Riverside, Coachella, other places. You need to go to the website and go find the chapter closest to you. And if there isn't one close to you and you want people to be meeting in your area, reach out to Kevin, who is my co-host today, who is the advocacy and grassroots director for the CRPA, and Kevin will work with you to get that chapter started up in your area. But now we're going to talk about some updates. So let's start off with, Kevin, the great fight to save the deer on Catalina.
Well, it hasn't been an easy fight. I mean, essentially, you have CRPA and a lot of local activism stepping in after seemingly a lot of work was done to create a plan to eradicate the deer, as they have eradicated a lot of other species of mammals on Catalina over the last 50 or so years. But with that groundswell of support, it seems like some brakes were pumped, but most importantly, it was brought into the public's eye. It wasn't just about, it's not just a battle anymore for people on Catalina. It has been made a statewide and even in some respects a nationwide issue.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've been looking at that I think is important is, number one, we have a fundraiser that we can do. Fundraiser is, if you go to the CRPA website, you can save the deer in Catalina by making a $50 donation towards the legal fights that we're doing on this. And you will actually get a stuffed fawn with a collar that says Save the Catalina Deer. And this is to give you something back for supporting us, but it's also part of the fight that we have to do. And so we have to do those kinds of fundraisers. But this one is one that you can push out to your friends and possibly expand the base. So we'd appreciate your help with that. But just as importantly, looking at this deer issue on Catalina, Kevin, it's just amazing to me, the coalition of people. And it shows the arrogance of government agencies. You know, if I was to say to the average person, imagine 100,000 people coming together globally from organizations that don't normally play in the political sandbox together and saying this is wrong. What do you think government's attitude would be? And today you would say, well, Rick, no, we're not doing that. Yet, Kevin, we have literally over 100,000 signatures on petitions saying from around the world, literally countries in Europe, name it, we have them. People from South America, people from Asia, people from Africa, people all over North America, like everywhere but Antarctica. And I'm sure if I could message to the people that work on Antarctica, we could get them too. But my point is, literally have said, this is stupid. You shouldn't be doing it.
Well,
and we have people going, yeah, we should.
I think what we need to continue and push as far as the education on this is concerned is that, you know, if you wanted to take it to its most extreme level, Catalina is Noah's Ark. We have this thing called chronic wasting disease that has plagued a lot of animals, mostly deer, in other states surrounding California. I don't know the specific statistics on chronic waste in California specifically.
We don't have it yet.
But you know, we have always told ourselves that if that population needed to be repopulated, it would have to come from an isolated population. Guess what Catalina is? You know, if that flood were ever, and again, this may be an extreme example, but you have to understand why organizations like CRPA and so many others are fighting so zealously against something like this happening. It's because we always need to think about those extreme circumstances. When that flood came over the earth, it was up to all of those animals on that boat to repopulate it and continue that species. And that's how we look at Catalina. So when it comes to this decision to eradicate the population, you're potentially taking away the future of that population for potentially the entire United States.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not just Catalina. It also comes back down to what we've been talking about. We're going to talk about this entire legislation. And that's the every gun owner bill packets, of which 1160 that we talked about earlier is a part of. Folks, this is a downright fight. We fought on 1253 this week, the firearm safety certificate. Both Sam Paredes of Gun Owners of California and I both gave really good, really hard testimony to push back on those. This is going to be a fight, and this is a fight we need all of you to get the message out to everybody. This isn't just people that, you know, oh, I go to a gun show, or I compete, or I hunt, or I do this. This is anybody, everybody who owns a firearm. Literally, in a population of 39 million people in California, this is between 8 and 9 million of us. Folks, this is well over the 25% mark, one in four of you. You need to have these conversations and say, something that I heard really, really good outside of a room. 100 years seems like a long time. It really does. But, you know, I was blessed to be born in the last century. I'll die in this century. But I also was born in the last millennium and will die in this millennium, which is kind of weird. That only happens once, well, every 1,000 years that people get to do that. And here's the thing that's unique about that. 100 years means your grandparents. 100 years ago, what I heard in the Capitol was, on a different testimony, my grandparents didn't have to have a government license to grow food on their own land. They didn't have to have a license or a government agency to tell them how to take care of their chickens or their goats or anything else. They didn't have to have a government permit to be able to give their neighbor some of those extra eggs or some of the vegetables from their garden or some of the fruit from their trees. They didn't have to have a government, you know, permit to have a firearm or a bow and arrow or anything else to go put extra food on the table. They didn't have to have, like, I can go, they didn't have to have a permit for their wagon. They didn't have to have a permit for this, a permit for that. We say we're free in this country, and arguably freer than most. But folks, this government encroachment, this nanny state that says you have to have a permit and a fee and a tax for everything you want to do has went way too far. And this package of every gun owner is designed to bankrupt you to use an enumerated right called the Second Amendment. Your thoughts, Kevin?
Well, my thoughts go to history, and it's been laid out for us. You guys, if you have not read the book Death by Gun Control, I would sincerely suggest going out to read it, because it lays it out for you pretty well. You know, the Armenian genocide in Turkey, 1.5 million people dead. Soviet Union between 1929, 1945, 20 million people dead. Nazi Germany between 1933 and 45, 20 million dead. Throughout China, 45 million. In Guatemala in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. In Uganda, this list goes on and on. Millions of people subject to laws specifically pertaining to firearms, pertaining to permits, pertaining to registrations, have died as a consequence of that kind of legislation. You know, if you want to, you know, call the firearms community an alarmist community, we're not an alarmist community. We're a learned community, because we've already seen this once in history, and we don't want it to happen again. This has the opposite to do with safety, and we've seen it in the history books.
And I think that is a great talking point, Kevin, for everybody to take from this show today. And we've talked about this before, but I want to highlight it. We are not alarmists. We're learned. There is nothing wrong with you, the person listening to this show, sitting down with Kevin and I, saying, I'm smart because I've actually listened to history. I've actually studied the subject matter. Do not allow people to be divisive and call you an alarmist. The last time I checked, when you yell fire because there's a fire in the house, you're not an alarmist. You're the hero rescuing people. The last time I checked, when you say duck because somebody's throwing something at you that could do bodily harm, not an alarmist. You're the hero. You're rescuing people. We are not the bad guys and gals in this. We are the people trying to rescue our fellow citizens by saying danger is coming your way at breakneck speed. So folks, as I say every week, be safe, shoot straight, and fight back for your rights here on Firing Line Radio and with the CRPA.
The Firing Line Radio Show has been brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit Turner's.com.
AM 590, The Answer.